Yeah? Okay, in the back. Although my background has in the early days covered quite a lot of work on image analysis for oncology directly, what I'm going to talk about today is some kind of more fundamental work we've been trying to do in developing or at least imaging and trying to then model normal brain development. And so this is kind of following on from a lot of work on adult brain image analysis, really. So fetal brain imaging is becoming more common, particularly using MRI. Really, the standard clinical tool is really ultrasound, which is non-invasive and relatively low cost and fast, and reveals the main tissue boundaries, but cannot really easily delineate soft tissue characteristics. And fetal MRI imaging, as I say, is just sort of emerging now as kind of a sort of accepted safe tool to imaging, to image the developed fetus. And patients are usually referred for MRI after ultrasound scans. And the advantage of MRI is it really provides a high resolution and very highly tissue contrast sensitive imaging modality, and allows us to detect fine scale structure and subtle tissue abnormalities. For example, we can see gray-white boundaries and lesions in the brain that might be emerging that you just cannot see in ultrasound images. An MRI image of the fetus looks something like this. And really the motivation for our work is, can we use this kind of data beyond clinical radiological evaluation, really to try and model and quantify what normal human brain development looks like? There's been a tremendous amount of work done in animal models of fetal development, but really no one really knows what's going on in a human in detail. And sort of the clinical motivation is detecting early structural abnormalities that may indicate later problems in childhood or pregnancy. So just to take a step back, there's been a vast amount of work done in developing automated and semi-automated techniques in analyzing structural images from adults and children. From the early days of image registration, image fusion, taking different types of images, this is CT and MRI, and this is MRI of tumor and vasculature and CT of bone, fusing them to plan surgery. And this is some work back from before the days of my PhD. This is fusing PET and MRI, again for head and neck cancers. More recently, people have been using particularly image registration to actually not just fuse images, but study anatomy directly. So if we take two images here of a premature baby taken at 3 or 4 weeks apart, we can see the differences due to the formation of gyri. And here you can also see some of the lesions and blood clots in the brain due to the prematurity of birth actually going away. And what we can do is use image registration here to calculate what's actually been happening in terms of reorganizing and growing of tissue from these two MRI scans. We end up with a deformation field that maps correspondence between one scan and the other, and another. And for example, my group's done quite a lot of work on what's called deformation tensor morphometry, where we try to quantify volume changes over time in the brain by essentially taking spatial transformations that describe the relationship between one anatomy and another, differentiating them to give measures of contraction and expansion. The simplest thing you can do is you can take this Jacobian matrix and take the determinant of that to look at just the scalar volume change over time. And these are just simple examples of applying the technique to look at changes in brain development, just to illustrate what's going on. This is a pair of scans of a premature baby taking it 28, 29 weeks gestational age, and 32 weeks, and calculating the relative volume changes that have occurred when mapping from the earlier scan to the later scan. And these are relative to the overall increase. So this red color here basically says this bit of tissue is, on average, expanding more quickly than the overall head size. and whereas the blue is saying things are contracting relative to the head size, but not necessarily contracting directly, although some of these regions are, in fact, you can see the contracting lesion here from here to here. What we can do also is study populations cross-sectionally. So these are some examples of a study of just taking one scan from each subject from a set of premature babies, born with different levels of prematurity, essentially, and trying to model the effect of how prematurity has adjusted the relative sizes of bits of anatomy. And this is just showing sort of basically there are regions that are larger and the regions that are smaller than expected if you model the effect across the population. And this is doing the same thing but looking at the effect of white matter injury on overall local patterns of brain development. So yet another area we've been looking at is looking at quantifying brain folding. There are loads of different measures of curvature for surfaces which people have proposed to use for looking at the surface folding in the brain. This is some work we've been doing looking at producing regionally or area invariant measures of folding that we can apply to patches of the brain. And these are just tracking these measures over age in a set of premature babies. So these are just some of the techniques that people have used to actually study developed and in developing anatomies, brain anatomy, but using essentially conventional adult imaging techniques. And the idea of our recent work is to try to take these kinds of techniques and apply them to understanding fetal brain development. And I'll just briefly show you some of the issues with trying to do that. The key factor in comparing fetal MRI to adult MRI is that adults generally can be told to remain still during an MRI study, and fetuses move and generally respond less well to requests to remain still. And in fact, smaller fetuses really do move dramatically, particularly when they wake up. And you can actually doing a backflip in the MRI scanner. A typical 3D adult structural MRI can take anywhere up maybe 12 minutes down to about 2 or 3 minutes on a faster scanner with a high field. So if you want to acquire a 3D image, motion artifacts are going to occur. And these are just some examples of adult imaging where the adults have not been able to keep still during a 3D MRI scan. So this is kind of a good scan, and this is a mediocre one, and this is a bad one. So these are adults who are moving just fractions of maybe 3 or 4 millimeters during a study. Ideally, if we want to acquire a full 3D MRI image during of a fetus without significant artifact, the whole study will have to take basically a fraction of a second because of the movement. So there are a number of faster 3D MR imaging techniques available, for example, EPI imaging, but these generally do not provide clinically optimal tissue contrast, and they're still not quite fast enough. So there are also a set of techniques for 3D motion correction of MRI. Some of them are acquisition related, where we acquire extra information in our imaging technique. For example, navigator echoes are one example, and retrospective case-based correction of phase errors are another approach to doing 3D motion correction. Generally, these assume that you've got a 3D rigid body or rigid object surrounded by air. So if your patient is an adult and they're moving, basically you've got a rigid body in your image, and there's a simple solution to that. The key problem, of course, is as a fetus, you've got a rigid body moving within the mother, which is deforming and fluidly moving. So really the practical solution for clinical fetal imaging has really been 2D fast multi-slice imaging. And each slice takes roughly less than half a second to acquire. And so you can get a reasonable slice of anatomy without motion artifacts or blurring. And typical slices go through the mother like this. You can see the brain here and then the anatomy of the mother surrounding. This is a typical single shot fast spin echo sequence, which is a 2D slice. It's using a technique to speed things up that kind of undersamples K-space a little bit, which makes it more sensitive in certain respects to distortions. And it's TT weighted and get quite nice resolution, half millimeter or so in plane, but the key problem is 3 millimeters through plane, so you end up with quite a thick slice to get the signal to noise. So we get quite an anisotropic resolution. And obviously there's fetal motion during a study, and it's really mostly a problem for relating the position of slices. Sometimes you lose a slice signal completely because of the motion of the fetus is just unlucky, essentially, but normally out of a stack of slices like this you get something that's pretty usable. Also you can get the issue of intensity distortion between the scans, partly due to just the bias field and the effect of the coil on the imaging, the position of the coil in the anatomy of the mother, and also some effects due to susceptibility related issues because you've got CSF and air boundaries in the mother. So the aim of this initial project was, well, can we take these stacks of data? In fact, what happens is clinically they acquire multiple axial or approximately axial sagittal and coronal stacks, basically attempting to get a reasonable few slices that are around a clinical area of interest. But what we want to do is take these low-resolution motion-corrupted stacks and build a single high-resolution volume out of that, which we can then plug into standard image analysis techniques to do morphometry and measure volume growth. So, in fact, what we have at UCSF is a GE system that has sort of a dynamic replanning technique that allows a radiographer to set up a set of slices to acquire, go along and snap each slice. Each slice is gated to the mother's breathing. And then what happens is the radiographer, radiologist, usually is sitting dynamically online and watching the images being acquired, and they have to manually approximately correct as the fetus moves, wakes up, and responds to the sound of the scan. So you end up with, I mean, these are reasonably good stacks, but you can end up with very, very mangled slice data. So some of the work we've been doing on this in my group really started with Francois Rousseau, who's my first postdoc who worked in this area. And he developed a technique that tried to address this, which is used as sort of what we call as a reconstruction-based technique. And what we did was we took the stacks. This is just three stacks in this case, sagittal, coronal, and axial, and did an approximate 3D rigid correction alignment of these three stacks. And then we form a single image volume on a regular rectangular lattice using some reconstruction method from this essentially scattered data. So we take our kind of idea of where our slices are and throw them together. And this produces a blurry image. And what we then do is take slices, groups, or individual slices, and then refine their alignment to this 3D regular lattice, this blurry image. And then we iterate round, essentially, and take an iterative process that then reconstructs the image, produces a sharper image, and then refines the alignment of each of the slices again and goes through and through. Now, it isn't as simple as that, essentially, because we've got a number of acquisition-related problems to take into account. Ideally, we'd like to do this sort of in a multi-resolution framework where you can take coarse structures, match those first, and go down to a finer scale. Well, firstly, the real problem is that these images are usually acquired within interleave. So we have to consider the slices individually and how they're ordered in space and time. So usually now they're two interleaves, so essentially you acquire the odd slices and the even slices. And so what we really need to do is start, if we're doing the registration, we first register the stacks together, and then we split the stacks up into their interleaves, and then register the separate interleaves, and then split them down, the interleaves, further by a factor of two and two again. So this gives you an extra kind of complexity to the kind of multi-resolution matching problem. So we also, when doing the slice to volume alignment, what we do is we take our individual slices and try and reorientate, and what we're doing is matching a full 3D alignment here, so three rotations and three translations to account for the rigid body motion of the brain in the mother. And because of differences in contrast, and you get a very blurry image to start off with when you reconstruct this, might look something like this. Our individual slices that are sharp can look very different in contrast. So we use a sort of a multimodality entropy measure of match rather than just subtracting one image from another to give a similarity. And as I say, we're matching full 3D registration here, one slice to a 3D volume. When we do the volume reconstruction, we also have to, essentially we'll be doing a reconstruction from scattered data. So we use a kind of a local neighborhood approach, which kind of weights local voxels with a kind of a Gaussian kernel to give us a stable estimate. Can be a little blurry, but it's for this iterative step, we're basically wanting a reasonably fast reconstruction step. We also have to consider relative intensity distortion correction. And so essentially we're modeling each slice can have a slowly varying distortion with respect to other slices of the similar anatomy. So we have to essentially do a relative correction. We pick one slice as a reference and then correct all the other slices that go through similar anatomy to that. And so the kind of data we get, this is kind of a reasonably well-behaved fetus after registration, kind of looks like this. So this is just kind of illustrates where those originally what we thought was orthogonal stacks were coming from were actually distributed pretty randomly around the brain. And what we're doing is kind of taking a guess and forming a 3D image from these slices that were acquired as the fetus moved. And sort of as just an example of the final 3D reconstruction, taking these three stacks that were acquired in a clinical study and then applying the kind of iterative registration and reconstruction, we get a 3D volume, these are slices through the 3D volume, which ideally we need to approach the same resolution in plane as in all three planes with a consistent anatomy. So now we have a 3D representation of the cortex, the white matter, and the deep structures that you couldn't get from this kind of data where you haven't got correspondence between slices. This is just another more extreme example of this is the raw sagittal stack, which was quite badly corrupted. You can see the orthogonal direction. There's a lot of movement. And then this is the reconstructed 3D view from that. You can see we've improved the resolution considerably. This is an interesting case of a fetus that was studied three times. This is quite rare. Usually they have two scans, maybe, if we're lucky. But this one actually had three scans before birth. So we had 25, 30, and 36 weeks gestational age. And we can see going from a very simple brain here with very little curvature, we can see the formation of the gyri and sulci, and then the primary gyri and sulci, and then the tertiary sulci. And the idea is basically we're getting to the point now where we can actually form 3D images, which we can then use to quantify 3D anatomy. Now, this basically resulted in us writing a few papers and getting some funding, as it always works, and then finally we get some funding and we can do some interesting stuff. And so we've done some very recent work, having got a grant to look at this in more detail, and particularly looking at the reconstruction problem or the registration problem in a slightly different way. One of the issues with the approach we initially took is that we're taking a set of stacks and we're guessing a reconstruction from that, which might be quite blurry. And this is an iterative process, and it's a two-step, basic process. One is, firstly, we form a 3D image from the data, and secondly, we try and match the slices to it. And the problem with this is that there's really no global or even local convergence guaranteed for this process. And you could iterate around and just go in a loop, essentially, moving a slice, reconstructing, and things aren't guaranteed to get better. So the final registration accuracy can actually be limited by this blurring and also the case where you just get a fetus that moves in such a way that a region of the brain is very badly sampled by the slices you have. So we took a slightly different approach to the problem in this more recent work. My second postdoc, Keo Kim, he's been looking at this from simply trying to align the stacks collectively and ignoring the 3D reconstruction problem. And what we can do is consider any pair of slices that intersect. We consider their match along their intersection line. And that tells us a tiny little bit of information about what's going on. It tells us something about sort of the match along the intersection. And for this case, we're using a simple image subtraction, essentially the squared difference in intensities, gives us a measure of how well these two slices match. Now that's poorly constrained because the thing can move around and slide. But what we can do is consider all the slices collectively. And so moving any one slice obviously affects its interaction with all the other slices. And we can summarize that by a big covariance matrix, essentially, which relates all the parameters of all the slices to each other. And so if we're trying to minimize the sum of squared differences in intensity, we can do a parameter update of that through three rotations and three translations and look at the covariance matrix that relates every translation for every axial, sagittal, and coronal slice and every rotation to all the other slices. And the idea of this is simply we then fix one of the slices in this, invert this matrix, and take a step that flows all of the slices towards each other, essentially. And the nice thing about this is we don't have to do a 3D reconstruction. All we're doing is slice-to-slice registration of stacks. And again, we're doing a hierarchical matching scheme where we take each individual slice and break down the interleave. Some examples sort of better visualized here. These are the original stacks, and this is after 3D individual slice alignment. So you can see these stacks sort of match here, but then of course when you've done an individual alignment, this structure here matches along their intersections. And so every slice intersects with every other slice, and it kind of locks the whole thing rigidly into one solution. So you can see here, going from the raw slice data, we then can do a 3D reconstruction based on this slice-to-slice intersection registration of all the data. And we go from blurry image essentially to a quite a nice fine scale 3D reconstruction. These are some examples of trying to take the data and actually do essentially super resolution. We're trying to increase the resolution of the data. We get two things from this. We've actually got more data than we started with anyway, so we can increase the signal to noise of the data just by averaging. But by using some techniques that take into account the structural information, essentially the anisotropic structure of the voxels, we know there's high resolution information in plane. We can use that to sharpen our reconstruction. So this is the original raw data, and this sagittal slice here is kind of a blurry structure through the midline. And here, the same structure here has been, and you can actually see the formation of a sulcus here, a sulcus or a gyrus, in this sharpened image, essentially because we've kind of combined the images in a way that increases the 3D resolution of the volume. We've done some work on trying to validate the registration. Essentially, the registration really determines the resolution and the final accuracy of the images. It's really the resolution that we're worried about. And so we really need to get a handle on how accurately each slice can be aligned in 3D. And we've done that using 3D neonatal MRI scans. So we've taken MRI scans, the high resolution, high quality 3D on an adult scanner of a premature baby. So essentially we get a nice 3D scan. We can then simulate motion. So we can take slices through that and simulate a set of slices and the trajectory of the premature baby moving. The idea of using a premature baby scan is it gives us similar anatomy to match as well as the fetus. And so this is just an example of the final mean squared errors of location in millimeters of points along the intersections of every slice. So originally the mangled slices were between 40 and 50 millimeters misaligned. And after slice-based and volume-based alignment, the error goes down to sort of a fraction of a millimeter. This is just showing by using this intersection-based technique, we actually do quite a lot better on for many of the slices, because we're only considering the kind of the fine scale registration of the individual slices. We can also think about the fetus movement in terms of a trajectory, and over time when we unencode the interleave, and we can see this is actually a figure I postdoc prepared, so you can't quite see it very well, but the line underneath all of the triangles is actually the ideal, the known trajectory, and then the dots are kind of an attempt to recover that over time during the scan. And so we're at the point now where we can sort of do quite fine scale registration of MRI data, and this is from standard clinical imaging. So the idea of this work is really, you know, the clinician already has stacks and stacks, 300 fetal scans, which we could then take and actually start building 3D models and 3D measurements of normal brain growth. So we've done a little bit of work this year on actually trying to apply or adapt some of the techniques developed in adults to try and analyze this 3D data that we're reconstructing from fetuses. And Piotr Habas, who was presenting this work probably in September, 2 weeks' time, at the MICAI conference. And this is actually some of his earlier work. He's got some more recent work on this as well. So we know the brain, the cerebral cortex, has been studied by a lot of different techniques, originally in vitro experiments on non-human primates, and only MRI has been recently applied to actually in vivo human studies. And what we want to do is try to look at and build models of change in anatomy. We know from pathology slices, we get, unlike an adult brain, we get many different cell types that are changing over time. So this is actually a T1 weighted MRI scan, which shows a lot of the structure, or some of the structure you see in these pathology slices. Some of the key things are that you can see the developed cortex, the white matter, but much of the white matter still has some developing structure in it. In particular, we've got a region of the ventricular zone, the germinal matrix, which is this tissue around the ventricles. And this is essentially where the cells that then are formed, that then propagate out to the cortex and the developed white matter. So what we've been doing is trying to apply adult techniques to then study and adapt them to study this kind of structure in the brain. And in terms of the age of the fetus we're looking at, many of our scans are around kind of 27 to 30 weeks gestational age. So earlier, the layers are pretty well delineated in all the cortical regions. We're in the region where some of the subplate zone and the white matter border becomes less distinct. So we're kind of studying this kind of anatomy. We've also got some scans from later on, but at the moment we're focusing on this. Later on, the germinal matrix also gradually disappear, and you can't see that in the scans. And eventually you get to a kind of a more developed anatomy with less layering in the white matter. Just to kind of reinstate sort of what a fetal scan looks like in terms of an adult anatomy. This is a T1 weighted scan of an older individual. This is a fetal scan with a T2 weighted fetus, approximately 22 weeks gestational age. And this is a T2 weighted scan of an adult. So obviously things are a bit smaller. What you have to consider is this scan was acquired when basically the fetus was moving and doing backflips in the scanner, when you compare to someone, an adult here, who's actually sitting still for 10 minutes in the scanner. What you also notice is the contrast is actually reversed. So because of this cellular development, the properties, the underlying properties, particularly the water properties in the tissues, is different to an adult brain. And so a T2 weighted image of the brain actually looks rather more like a T1 weighted adult sequence. So we get brighter white matter and darker gray matter around the cortex, which kind of looks like an adult scan. A T2 weighted scan, or I should say an adult T1 weighted scan, a T2 weighted scan has those kind of contrasts reversed, although we still have white CSF fluid around the brain. So what we've been going for in this initial work is to try to delineate and automatically detect these normal tissues at this particular developmental stage around 22, 27 weeks. And in this region, on this age range, as you see, we can get dark cortex, lighter white matter, and down here we've got germinal matrix. And what we've been trying to aim to do, also you can see other layers here which we haven't quite addressed yet in the MRI scans. But what you do is you can plot a histogram of this kind of 3D image and look at how these tissue types actually have the same contrast properties. So this is quite a big problem. All we've got is T2-weighted clinical imaging. And we know that, for example, gray matter and germinal matrix are both dark in these T2-weighted sequences. And so we need to somehow use, in particular, we need to somehow use spatial context in deciding which bits of this MRI scan are actual germinal matrix or whether they're cortex or developed gray matter. So what we've done is actually construct a statistical model of where we expect germinal matrix and actually gray matter and white matter and CSF to be in normal anatomy. So we took a load of normal scans, reconstructed them, manually traced them with the aid of radiologists, and then built an atlas out of them. It's a statistical atlas. We took each of these MRI scans, warped them symmetrically into a common anatomical space, and then constructed essentially a probabilistic atlas of where of the probability of any given voxel being gray, white, or CSF. And this is a very standard technique used in adult segmentation, a brain image segmentation. Here we're extending it because we're adding germinal matrix into our model. And we end up simply counting the fraction of voxels from our spatially normalized population to give a kind of a statistical prior of where we expect tissue types to be in the brain. And having done that, we've got our nice theoretical model constructed by someone manually tracing lots of subjects. We then use this as a spatial statistical prior in a labeling scheme. And again, this is a pretty standard technique, but it's just extended to include classes that are developing and transient in these MRI images of fetuses. So we take our individual new subject, which we want to label as gray, white, CSF, or germinal matrix, and we warp it into our reference space, and then we do an EM segmentation scheme where we maximize the expectation and then iterate around and recalculate the probabilities. And this is a very standard technique, but also where we also model the spatial variation of intensities. So we end up with a labeling of the MRI scan into gray, white, CSF, and germinal matrix, and also a variation of intensity across the image of each particular tissue class. So this actually captures both intensity distortion in the MRI imaging process, but also variation in tissue contrast due to the actual developmental process. So you get a gradient in intensity, and which reflects a gradient in the MRI properties of tissue. So we've also then tried to validate this technique, and we can basically take scans that we've manually segmented and try to work out the error in estimating the volume of tissue with age. And this is a range of ages. We took gestational age 20 to 22 weeks in this case, and we plotted that against, we've plotted here the germinal matrix volume. So we can see the germinal matrix volume is going up nicely with age, which we kind of expect for this age range. And these are the differences in the volume for the automatic segmentation versus a manual segmentation. For example, you can compare the germinal matrix classes here, which are pretty close, and they're doing pretty good. So, and you can see here, this is basically the manual segmentation, the automated segmentation, both track with age reasonably well. So as a first go at actually automating the delineation of tissue types in this kind of brain anatomy, we've started to be able to do this. This is applying the same technique to premature babies, premature neonates. But again, and this is a slightly later age range than our fetuses, but just to illustrate the same techniques we're using, here we're modeling what is essentially what we call myelinated and unmyelinated white matter classes. Here it's rather than germinal matrix, which is probably about 10 or 15 weeks earlier than this. So finally, we've got 3D maps of tissue volume, and we can then try to think about doing morphometry and measurements of local structure on the tissues. And what we can do is apply techniques that are also pretty standard in adult brain image analysis. Particularly one we've been interested in is looking at cortical thickness. Actually, thickness is of all these layers, but initially we've been looking at cortical thickness. And cortical thickness is a nice mathematical problem in this. Actually, you need to define a unique correspondence between the inside and the outside of the gray matter. And there's a number of techniques to try to define this, and one of the most common is essentially solving Laplace's equation. It gives you a set of kind of streamlines which you can then use to give a unique mapping between one point and the other point on your cortex. And having done that, we can plug that into our labeling of our tissue cortex. We've looked at a sort of here as initial experiments. We actually got an undergraduate student to look at this over the summer, and he's been looking at fetal cortical thickness at a range of ages. And this is starting at 20 weeks and going up to 22.5 weeks. And one of the challenges, we haven't actually got any ground truth. We don't actually know what's correct here because there's very little published material on this particular age range. There's probably about 5 weeks earlier than this, or 10 weeks, there's a number of studies of fetuses that have been terminated. They can do measurements, ground truth, but here we're into the range where there's less data from pathology, essentially. But we know that from some of the earlier studies, we kind of matching up with this pattern where people have seen a thickening of the cortex in the region of the Sylvian fissure where the brain forms and folds to create the Sylvian fissure. And so we think these look very similar to sort of some of the earlier scans in time, the earlier studies in time that people have done from pathology. What we need to know is what's happening later on and whether this actually makes sense. But this is pretty preliminary at the moment in terms of results. So we've also tried to compare kind of cortical thickness measurements in fetuses and premature neonates of different ages. Well, ideally we'd like to get them to overlap, but just to get an idea of whether they're comparable or not. So these are the range of average cortical thicknesses we've seen in our fetuses. And this is similar measurements we've got in our premature babies of obviously later developmental stage. So at the moment we're kind of trying to sort of calibrate our system and check that there's sort of meaningful measures of thickness we're getting from these 3D images. It's quite interesting and challenging to actually get through the literature and find these kind of values. So to summarize, we've got 3D fetal brain imaging analysis really is possible. We can correct fetal motion that's present in clinical studies to form a true 3D volume image. And we've developed some and adapted some techniques of tissue segmentation from adults, and we've applied it to developing tissue structures. And managed to, just at the end, actually finally measure cortical thickness. What we're going to do next is try to do deformation morphometry on this kind of data and build models probably in a particular narrow age range to keep things simple of normal brain growth. One of the key things is you've got this two problems of increasing brain volume but also changing tissue contrast over time. So it can be very difficult to compare anatomies of very different ages. So that's where we're at the moment. I'd like to acknowledge my NIH grant on this project and people in the Biomedical Image Computing Group, my two postdocs, Kia Kim and Piotr Habas, and Dashan, who was the very good undergraduate summer student we had. And we have a lot of clinical collaborators at UCSF, in particular Orit Glenn, Jim Barkovich, and Donna Ferraro, who are the main people who bring in the actual clinical problems and actually giving us access to the scans. And that's it. I finished early, but any questions?